are sampling, quickly overcook itself. I, in fact, heating up my coaxial cable to my dipole much more than I would like. And I understand in order to use a resonant dipole, some sort of an antenna analyzer is beneficial to that. And I'm still reading up on it, but I thought I'd take advantage of the knowledge of the net here on that. As far as if there's a particular style or brand that you would recommend, or probably more importantly, ones to stay away from.
Okay. When I finish my little spiel on antenna analyzers and standing wave ratio, I'm going to turn it over to the net for them to recommend what brand name you should get. I know that some people have bought the one built by MFJ. Some people are very happy with it. I think there's an AEA. I mean, there are various brand names of various qualities and various prices. So I'll turn it over to the net, and we'll have the people who already own these pieces of hardware tell you how much they like them and which one you should buy. But what's really going on here? The truth of the matter is that almost all of us need a transmission line. In other words, back in the old days of 1910, the ham radio operator was in the attic of the house. The dipole, one end of the dipole went out the north window, went out the south window of this wooden house. The transmitter sat in the middle on a wooden table, and you didn't need a transmission line. Pretty soon, we amateur radios decided to operate from a bedroom or the basement. And now to get the signal up to the antenna that's up in the air, maybe over the house, it takes a transmission line. The characteristics of transmission line is that, properly used, you send a signal into one end, and 98% of the signal comes out the other end. But a transmission line has got a funny characteristic. If it's a so-called 50-ohm transmission line, you want the far end to look like a 50-ohm resistor. And if the far end of the transmission line is terminated with anything but a 50-ohm resistor, a certain amount of the signal will not go into the load, whether it be an antenna or whatever you put at the far end. It will not go there. A certain amount of it reflects back. The amount that reflects back is rated by a parameter called standing wave ratio. It's also called reflection coefficient. It's also called S11 if you're using scattering parameter measurements with a network analyzer. We got a lot of different words for it. The bottom line is always the same. Depending on how mismatched the far end of the antenna is, a certain amount of energy reflects back. And so now you get energy reflecting back. The transmitter will not accept it, so the energy bounces back and forth with the cable before it finally gets radiated. Because the energy is bouncing back and forth in the transmission line increases slightly in insertion loss for most situations. It's a slight increase. And so it's not going to burn up your transmission line. You put your hand on it. In most cases, you're not even going to feel the heat. The main thing that happens if your antenna is not a good match and gives you standing wave ratio, most transmitters have a built-in self-protect circuit. Beyond a certain point, they either turn themselves off entirely or start cutting back in transmitter output power. That's the main disadvantage. Now, there are antennas that I have used that have a 20-to-1 standing wave ratio, a dipole that's misused on the wrong band or whatever. And so your transmitter usually is unhappy at about 1.8-to-1 standing wave ratio. Beyond that, most transmitters start getting cranky. So you'd like the antenna to be under 1.8-to-1. That's a magic number I look for. In the professional world, 2-to-1 is usually considered good enough. And if you're buying a high-tech antenna, you buy a 1.5-to-1 standing wave ratio antenna. So these are the kind of numbers you're looking for. So why in the world would K2RIW, the guy you're talking to, use a 20-to-1 antenna? Well, that particular transmitter I was using had enough tuning and loading control to its output network, to its PHY network, that it could properly tune that. The modern-day equivalent to that is an antenna tuner, or a matchbox as it's called, and you tune it correctly, and the transmitter sees 1-to-1, even though the antenna is 20-to-1. And if your feed line has a basic loss that's low enough to begin with, a 20-to-1 is not bad. The increase in loss of the line is a proportional increase to the basic loss. If your line starts off at a 0.1 dB insertion loss per 100 feet, favorite frequency, and you operate with 20 to 1, the 0.1 dB of insertion loss goes up to 0.4 dB insertion loss, some number like that, and it's still insignificant. However, if I have a transmission line where I'm using a not-so-good cable way up at a VHF frequency, like 432 megacycles, where the transmission line has a basic loss of 6 dB per 100 feet, and now I operate with a 5-to-1 standing wave ratio, the insertion loss of the cable doubles, and it's significant. So, is VISWAR bad? Not always. Depends on what's the basic loss of the cable to begin with. Now, antenna tuners are a nice thing to own, particularly if you want to do antenna experimenting. You want to start zigzagging the dipole that's on 160 meters and fitting into your quarter acre of property. That's a nice thing to do. You can do it, it's fun. And you'll find your own favorite way of zigzagging it and putting doodads on the end, capacitive top hats and loading coils and whatever. And your antenna tuner will give you a nice evaluation of how successful your effort is at making an antenna that has a pretty good standing wave ratio for that particular feed line you're using today. The antenna tuner is a fun tool to have. It's not a drastic necessity, but it's a fun tool. And for a man of your resources, Cash, I think you should have one. So, you guys out there who are using antenna tuners, I think Rich has one, I think Mel has one. Give me your call letters right now, and we'll go in sequence and tell Cash what is your favorite one, how many dollars should he spend, and what are the properties he should be looking for. K2IW and the Tech Man listening.
Yeah, K2KEY.
Mel recognized. Anyone else? Okay, Mel, what's your favorite brand of antenna tuner, and how many dollars, and tell Cash what he should buy.
Is he talking about the instrument to measure the antenna, or am I getting it correct, Dick?
Yeah, I keep calling it antenna tuner, and I think he wants to buy an antenna analyzer, the thing that measures the swept standing wave ratio. Let me turn it back to Cash to make sure. Is that what you intended to buy, Cash, and to KDU, KDN, K2IW, and the TechNet?
Yes, that's correct. My understanding is that that's the simplest way to tune the antenna. If I'm making a dipole, to trim it down so that it's resonant at whatever frequency I'm thinking, you know, if it's 3.8 or whatever it may be, megahertz.
Yeah, I kept confusing the words of antenna tuner is the thing that you use to correct the VISWAR without retuning the antenna. The antenna analyzer measures how successful you were at tuning the antenna itself. So it's antenna analyzer, I think Cash wants to buy. And Mel, tell him what you think is your favorite brand. The smart guys in Brooklyn, which brand do they buy? You got it, Mel.
Hey, if you remember, K2KEY, by the way, if you remember, we did one of those tutelages on by using both the Smith chart and using antenna analyzing equipment and to assure the accuracy or see, you know, I guess we nitpicked it so that we could really, you know, determine the accuracy of these different units. The one that I prefer, let me tell you, there is a disclaimer that comes with them all. It depends on what you want to measure. Are you just looking to measure straight SWR? Of course, you can do that by any method you want, anywhere from a simple SWR bridge. Or if you want to do a bit more in-depth antenna work, where you want to measure resistance and reactance, that's another story. In my case, like I say, I like to know the resistance and the reactance when I'm doing my antenna experiment. I'd like to also know what does the antenna look like over the, from the, say I tune the antenna for the center of the band, what does it look like? I want an instant graph of what I see from one end of the band to the other. In other words, the bandwidth. And the one I selected for this is the AEA. I have an AEA HF antenna analyzer. I have a number of their instruments. I have the HF analyzer. I have the VHF analyzer. I also have a couple of their other instruments, but I won't get into that now because I think you'll be getting off the subject. But with the AEA antenna analyzer, you can not only are you going to be able to read all the information center frequency, but you can, again, expand it so that you can go so many, well, you can actually cover, for instance, the entire 80 meter band from the 3 to 4 megahertz. So, and it gives you a good graphic picture of what's going on, which is also, they have a port on the back of it where you can download it to your computer if you want to do further studies. The AEA analyzer will be able to come within approximately and give you a fairly good accuracy within 10 degrees. Now, at first it doesn't sound like much, but if you are interested, like I say, in knowing what the antenna, the reactant, is a capacitive or inductive reactant. A number of the antenna analyzers, as they come within 10 degrees, and we did this on the Smith chart and one of our tutelages, and you'll see that when it comes to a decision, if you going, if it jumps, if it's inductive reactive and it jumps to capacitive reactive, this can make quite a bit of difference in your doing your antenna analysis. So the point is, with a graphic display, you can get used to understanding, you know, what's going on there, and then be able to interpolate the additional measurements that you're trying to do. Now, if you just want a bare bones, just want to read straight SWR, you know, that's all I want to do. I want to set it for so-and-so frequency. What's my SWR at that frequency? MFJ makes a very simple instrument for that. And there, of course, if you want to go to next step, which I also used in the past, I've used RX noise bridges. I've used some sophisticated commercial instruments. Of course, HiTech will tell you about network vector analyzers and things of that sort. In fact, we did a little tutelage also on vectors and how to determine your antenna or the reaction and everything, how to actually draw a picture of the vector situation in respect to antenna. So it depends. Like I say, if you want a medium, middle of the road, I could say to you that you want the best of all, situations with antenna analyzers, I think AEA, I would look into. That's my personal suggestion. K2RIW, the TechNet, K2KEY.
Hey, give me a little bit more information here now, Mel. I'm getting the impression that Cash wants to do a fairly simple measurement. He would like to have a graphic display. He'd like to be able to see that V-shaped curve or bathtub-shaped curve of standing wave ratio, vertical axis, versus frequency, horizontal axis. And he would like the bottom of the bathtub curve or the bottom of the V-curve to be falling in the middle of his favorite spot on the 20-meter band or the 40-meter band. That's what I think he wants. I believe the AEA is sort of the Cadillac instrument, and I believe the MFJ is sort of the Volkswagen instrument. Roughly how many dollars is each one of those, Mel? Back to you, Mel.
Okay, this is K2KEY. All right, there's one other that has come on the market. I haven't had the privilege to use it yet, but I heard it's given some really good reports, except that you also must know, you know, what it is capable, and understand what you see. And they more or less came along with the same idea as the AEA has, and that's the antenna submission. And it also is a graphic display. Now, as far as price range, I believe, off the top of my head, I don't remember the exact price of the MFJ, but I think it's approximately one-half or even a little bit less than one-half the price of the AEA. AEA has a number of models besides their regular HF. They have a more sophisticated HF analyzer, which, again, goes more in-depth if you how much you want to really look at the antenna. And they have also a very involved program. I have the disc. It is a great program, which also will produce a Smith chart from your measurements. Will produce a Smith, fairly decent Smith chart display on your computer when hooked up. The unit is once you make the measurement, you spectrum. Now, again, I believe that the price range between MFJ, which is bare bones, to the AEA sophisticated to be from their minimum AEA units, approximately, most likely, double the price to their most sophisticated, I would say about three times the price, Dick, over.
Yes, but the AEA is roughly how many dollars for the basic AEA here, Mel?
I believe the new price on it now, it's hard for me to quote, but I know the new price is somewhere around, I think $500, if I'm not mistaken. Somewhere in that neighborhood, around $500, Dick, over.
Okay, so I'm putting myself in Cash's shoes right now, and I'm just looking for ballpark. So I think you're saying that the basic AEA is around $500. Does that suggest the MFJ is around $200, $250,
Mel? I believe so. I thought I had it here. Let me see if I don't know if I have a... I have the catalog here, MFJ's catalog, but where I stuck it just away. Yes, I believe that's approximately the difference in price. I think MFJ is selling between $175 and $200, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sure somebody on frequency here may be more familiar with that unit. And the AEA runs around $500 to $600. But again, it depends on how much antenna work you're looking to do. It can do things very simple. Just making XWR measurements, you can most likely do it basically with what you've got now. And I'm sure you have your radio. You can basically hook up your regular SWR bridge, make some measurements, cut the antenna as best you can, and be done with it. It depends on how much how much you're interested in doing antenna work. If it's worth the investment, if you're a person that's looking to do a lot of antenna experiments like I do, you find that like an AEA, I use it almost, I would say within the last month, I've used it at least three or four times. In fact, I used it to design that inside receiving loop. I used that AEA analyzer, and it was terrific to design and to get working this inside receiving loops, which is really the only way I could get on 75 meters at night with the noise level the way it's been, Dick, over.
Okay, so, Cash, let me sum up what I think I'm hearing and what I know. If you and I were a 16-year-old guy interested in ham radio, you got a paper route, and money is important, you and I would open up the Radio Amateur's antenna book. There's a section in there on how to homebrew a standing wave ratio bridge, and it contains about $25 or $30 worth of parts, and we could build one. That, with our digital voltmeter and our transmitter, would allow us to go one step at a time in frequency, make a measurement, plot it on a graph, and we'd, for $30 and a couple of days worth of labor, we'd make a standing wave ratio measurement at the bottom of the line. Or maybe you're going to use your bird watt meter in the forward and reverse mode and look at forward power and reverse power and interpret that with a little bit of an equation into standing wave ratio. Then the other end of the line is these graphic analyzers where they automatically sweep, automatically plot on their liquid crystal screen what is the standing wave ratio versus frequency, and they give you a beautiful graph. For a person of your affluence, Cash, a man living in Locust Valley, you're probably going to choose the more Cadillac approach. You write a check, the problem goes away, you've got this beautiful instrument, and you can now start doing some fancy antenna tuning in the backyard. We amateurs on the HF bands and maybe even on 432 and 2 meters, for the most part, none of us build our transmitters anymore. Some of us will build a low noise amplifier for the receiver. Some of us will build an afterburner, but we don't build our rigs. But we do build antennas, and we experiment with transmission lines. So if you like experimenting and tinkering, antennas are one of the best areas to do it. It's a black art. Very few people have got a good understanding of antennas. I mean, I once worked for a company with 1,050 were electronic engineers. So there were 800 electronic graduate engineers in the building. 10 of those people had a good working knowledge of antennas. So it's a black art, not well taught in the schools. And so we amateurs, to some degree, are the antenna experts of planet Earth. And if you want to do experimenting, beautiful area to do it. An antenna analyzer is a nice piece of instrumentation to have to do that. So this gives you a little bit of a picture of what you're getting into, and I think you will enjoy it. After you choose one, after you buy it, after you use it for a while, I'd like you to come back and tell us what you like, what you don't like, and how's it going. N2, KDU, KDN, K2RIW, the TechNet.
Okay, thank you. K2RIW, that's Dick, is that correct?
Absolutely, Cash. You got it right.
Okay, so we have to do a while to put together call signs and names. Excellent answers. And if I understand Mel correctly, if I'm interpreting what he's saying correctly, if I went with one of the AEA models, that it would, by virtue of the fact that it's looking up to the computer, it'll give me a Smith chart plot, that therefore I wouldn't have to run around to the outside of my property with a field strength meter to check out the pattern, or am I misunderstanding that?
Yeah, you made a good guess there. Rich recognized you made a good guess, and no, we've led you astray on that one. A Smith chart is a rather elaborate graphic technique for displaying the fine details of standing wave ratio. See, there's a zillion ways an antenna can have a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. The usual criteria that people use between a good antenna and a bad antenna. The usual criteria is less than 2-to-1 standing wave ratio, pretty good antenna. Above 2-to-1, not so great. Unless you know what you're doing, you ought to make an improvement. So that's the rough detail. Now, what makes a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio? Well, if it was a purely resistive antenna connected to a 50-ohm transmission line, if the antenna presented 25 ohms of impedance, that's a ratio of 25 versus 50, that would be a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. If, on the other hand, the antenna presented 100 ohms of resistive impedance to a 50-ohm transmission line, that again is a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. The antenna could have a resistive component of exactly 50 ohms in series with a reactive component of something like 20 ohms, and that would be a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. And the reactive component could be either capacitive or inductive. So a Smith chart gives you a dot on the screen for each frequency, and when you sweep a bunch of frequencies, it connects the dots with a complicated circular curve on this polar plot called Smith chart, and it gives you the fine details of how much resistance, how much capacitor reactance, how much inductive reactance at each individual frequency. So the Smith chart is giving you a microscopic view of what the standing wave ratio of the antenna is. When it comes to the antenna pattern, what direction in space is the signal being squirted out of your antenna? None of that instrumentation in your shack is going to tell you that. You now got to look up the good books for your particular dipole, your particular orientation, your particular frequency of operation, your particular number of feet above the ground. You go to the right books, you'll find some curves. If it's a Yagi antenna, you're going to rotate the antenna, and by watching the signal strength meter as you rotate the antenna, when somebody is giving you a steady signal, you could, if you want to, plot the antenna pattern. So antenna pattern is something you measure outside the house, outside the vicinity of the antenna. There's essentially no simple instrumentation you can connect to your feed line that's going to tell you antenna pattern. It's only going to tell you what percentage of the signal you send down that cable really gets absorbed by the antenna and radiated somewhere in space. So Smith chart doesn't tell you that. antenna analyzer doesn't tell you that, and maybe that makes it a little bit more clear. Before I turn it over to Rich, let's see if that makes some little more sense there, Cash. N2NKN, N2KDN, K2LIW, my name is Dick.
Okay, Dick, yes, thank you very much. I actually did clear it up. I actually cracked my extra book, and I remember that I was going to be reading up on Smith chart stuff as I studied for the extra, so that's actually helped clarify it a lot. I appreciate all the input, and I enjoy the net until I get a out in my car right now in my heated garage, so I'm not freezing. But hopefully I'm going to be running an antenna in my house up in my attic pretty soon, so I can sit down in my chair and enjoy the net more. If I may, I know there was another gentleman in there, but I did have another question when I heard Mel talking about tutelage. I'll turn it over to him first, but I guess I should bring it back to you first then, and to KDM.
Yeah, one of the things you're going to discover, Rakesh, is that your antenna, the mag mount or whatever it is on your automobile in the garage, gives you a slightly noisy signal in the repeater. You could build a very simple coat hanger antenna or a bus bar antenna built into a UHF a chassis mount connector, a so-called SO239, and with a piece of RG58 cable, you run that antenna up to the chimney of your house, strap it down with a chimney mount, that $3 antenna on the chimney with a ratty old piece of cable coming down into the shack, connected to your handy talkie, will make your signal 100 times louder to this repeater than it is with a beautiful system from your automobile. When it comes to VHF, 2 meters from Locust Valley, altitude is everything. You got to climb above the local terrain and above the trees. So a $3 antenna on the chimney is going to make you 100 times louder, 20 decibels stronger into the repeater. So that would be a very nice Saturday afternoon explanation. And I think you wanted Mel to give you some more information about his tutelage. He's going to do that right after we first give Rich, who's waiting in the wings. He wants to make a comment. N2EO, go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick. You'll pardon my rough voice. I had a question for Mel on the loop antenna. Okay, to go ahead, or should we let Cash go first?
Let's get Cash get the answer to this question that's on the board right now, which is the tutelage. It turns out that these guys in Brooklyn, the Kings County Radio Club, a very tight-knit group of guys. Mel's the president of that group. And I keep confusing them with the other Brooklyn group, but I hope I gave them the right name. Kings County Radio Club, Kings County Radio Society, you know what I mean. Mel is the president of that group. They get together periodically. They hold these shootouts where they test various kinds of mobile antennas out in that great big open field, that Floyd Bennett Field there in Brooklyn. They also hold these classes of tutelage to each other where they teach each other how things work. So that's what I think Mel is referring to. I'll let him give you more description. You got it, Mel. K2KEY, K2IW in the TechNet.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Thank you, Dick. Well, the tutelage that we did, we conducted it here on the net. Every week we did eight tutelages with Dick. Two of us went step by step on all kinds of methods of using the Smith chart methods of matching from basic HF right up into VHF, UHF, and we went through the transmission lines and everything. And so we did a whole series, Koch, on how to use the Smith chart, how to apply measurements that you take of your antenna and to draw a Smith chart, how to do certain things like air stubs, how to figure out whether you'd have to add capacitor, like Dick was just more or less elaborating, that the antenna that determines whether it's capacitive or inductive reactance and how to compensate for that, what to do to fix that problem. rather than hit and miss, you know, running up and down from pulling the antenna up and down and trying this and trying that, more or less using the Smith shot, which is, as we had said, goes way back to the 30s, and yet it's still a very viable way to this day of doing antenna analysis. So with the use of one of these modern, good or decent modern antenna analyzers, such as AEA or Smith, antenna Smith, or even if you know how to interpolate. Now, again, put the word interpolate because sometimes it can be confusing. You'll scratch your head and say, what the heck am I looking at here? If you get to that point where you can interpolate and then go to your Smith chart, do a plot, you'd be amazed what you see. It is not to tell you that what the radiation pattern is or the takeoff angles or any of that kind. We did something separate. We did a whole thing on that, on wave angles. That's another little bit of a different subject. But this is on the basic measurements, antenna measurements, to get you, as they say, in a ballpark. So we did that. We did, about eight different weeks on the use of the Smith chart and the, you know, associated subject on it. We really covered it in depth. I think that's what he's referring to, Dick, over.
Yeah, that's what you're referring to. See, Bell called it tutelage. He also holds classes with his group. And that's what I hear he's referring to. I misinterpreted Bell. I called it the Smith chart classes, the radio classes that we held on this TechNet about a month and a half ago. Mel had a series of test questions he threw out to the group, and we were using the Smith chart live, so to speak, without video. He was teaching us step by step how you draw the lines and the dots on the Smith chart to properly interpret what's going on. So that's what he's referring to, the classes, I called it. Mel, the professor, was giving those classes, and I was making some comments from time to time. So now I know what he's talking about. Back to you for any further questions on that. And maybe by popular demand, we'll repeat some section of that. It turns out that if you're in an electrical engineering class in a respected college, they spend a number of weeks teaching their students how to use a Smith chart. It's a relatively elaborate thing. The nuances of what's going on with transmission line analysis when you have various kinds of resistive and reactive loads on the end of the transmission line is a somewhat complicated subject. So students in electrical engineering get a couple of weeks of that instruction. And Mel was giving a miniature course on that, a catch-up course, a intermediate level course, so to speak, right here on the TechNet. And now I know he was calling it tutelage. So if enough people want it, we could possibly repeat it. Back to you, Cash, for any comments on that. N2KDN, K2RIW in the TechNet.
This is the W2VL repeater.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, thanks. That kind of answered my question. I didn't know if it was something that was done on the net, or if it was something involved with the Limar Club or one of the other ones, clubs, because that's another thing that just have tossing around in the back of my head is I think the benefit of a club might be helping me out as I advance in the hobby, or start advancing in the hobby once again after the hiatus I had. Appreciate all the info. I'll probably be hanging around for a little while to listen in, but I do have to get up fairly early for work in the morning. This is N2KDN.
Okay. Rich, N2EO, go right ahead with your question.
Okay, thank you very much, Dick. I wanted to address this to Mel. I was speaking with Barry, N2MB, and he told me that about the group that you built. I believe you're using it in your basement, which is where I have my ham shack. I wonder if you've ever compared it to something like the Palomar loop stick with the preamp. The reason I'm asking is right now, with some of the medical problems I have, I'm not going to get into building a loop or building anything. I was looking at the Palomar. I wonder what your opinion of it is, if you've ever compared it to that loop, as far as receiving. stability and, you know, getting a pattern to a particular place and knowing noise. And you, I wonder if you ever actually used it in your basement. Go ahead, Mel, K2KY, M2EL.
Hey, Rich, very good. This is K2KY. First of all, no, it's not used in a basement. My ham shack is on the second floor of the house approximately, so it put it about 20 feet approximately above ground level. It used to be in a coal bin. Thank God those days are gone. Now, as far as the comparison to the commercial loops, I do not know. This is the second one I built. Now, the first one I built with a friend out of copper pipe. This was a transmitting loop that we built for 20 meters. This one that I'm using currently is only for receiving. It is for receiving 80 meters, 75 meter band, which is horrendous noises here. I have for transmitting outside. What I thought was a very good antenna, the problem is the noise level comes at me from so many different directions because it's a one wavelength loop that's 272 feet. And it's not quite square, you know, as they show you, of course, in a nice little drawing in a magazine. It's somewhat longer one way wave than the other, but basically it is a 272 foot circumference of wire. And unfortunately, the noise level, like I say, sometimes on that loop outside is horrendous. As far as transmitting goes, it works quite well. So what I have in the shack, it's a fairly simple thing. It basically is more of a, I guess, a job for a carpenter than it is for electronics. However, I did enhance upon it. Basically, I built a frame. I built a number of different versions, but the final version right now has been now in operation about a week, and I'm sort of being very, very gratified about how it works. Basically, a square, and it's approximately 3 feet. Or I shouldn't say approximately. It's exactly 3 feet on the side, so the square is 12 feet around, and it uses coaxial cable. It's called a shielded loop. Now, inside is another one, one half the size, that is 18 inches on each side, or a total of 6 feet in circumference. And it pivots inside. Now, it stands on end, so it's, if you took the square and stood it up on one corner, this is basically how it looks. And it's sitting on a camera mount so that I can turn it, I can tilt it, and this makes it so that with experiments, I can set it to null the noise. I can then set the other antenna. It acts somewhat of a wave meter the second you loop inside. And so there is some degrade sometimes the signal somewhat, but then I have a homebrew, which I just also finished up this week, combination of a Q multiplier, a regenerative Q multiplier, and a noise squasher. So in working, so I get approximately about 10 dB of voltage gain, but I get a very high dynamic range of better than 100 dB of high dynamic range, which I was very skeptical that I would get that, but I did make some very detailed measurements on my, with my generator and all, and it's amazing. So with that combination, I'm able to really get on the noise on some really tough conditions as far as they say, you can't see it. So this is basically what I'm doing. Like I say, it's not a transmitting loop. It's strictly a receiving loop. And I no doubt say time to get, if you really want to get into a lot of very involved engineering and everything, you could most likely start motorizing and doing things with it. But that's not my intent at this point. Rich, I hope this answers your question. N2EO. And the tech nexus is K2KEY.
Okay, Mel, K2KY, M2EL. Yeah, I realize it's the receiving loop only. I certainly realize that. Blow the pants off it, you put a Q wide into it. still fed with open wire line on 75 meters, but also I pick up a lot of noise. So I have the shack in the basement. Now it's not that far below ground, and I was wondering, because I use a broadcast receiver down there with a loop, and it works just fine, but on 80 meters, you know, signals are not as strong as a broadcast station. In your opinion, without actually trying it, being, say, over the loop sitting on a table, figure roughly 4 feet, 5 feet below ground, any guess how the Palomar might work?
Oh, that's a very good question, Rich. I don't know. I really don't. The only other past experience was with a friend of mine, lived in a city. Now, you know, it almost can equate about really bad locations. This person that worked with me lived in New York City, and in one of the high rises, you know, all steel, concrete, steel models that stretch up into the, you know, into the sky. And he was up about, I think he was on, I don't remember, I think he was 10th floor, you know, I believe it was the 10th floor, you know, really in the canyons there. When you say 10 floors up, it's, you know, this is not in New York City. There's no III, as they say, because, you know, you're still in a canyon. And he had a little patio, if you want to call that, this little thing that sticks off the apartment that you, two people can stand out on it, about the size of it. And he wanted to get on the air. He said, well, when he's going to go on W and everything, he says, what can I put as an antenna? And we thought and thought. And we came up with one of these. We decided to homebrew it. He was going to buy one of the commercial transmitting loops, transmitting receiving loops. And we wound up, we homebrewed it. So with the homebrew version, in fact, co-story how we took it home, had to take it home actually in pieces because it was copper pipe and get it home on the subway. They took a torch home with them, gas torch, because we had a silver solder. The idea is the resistance of the joints has to be kept at a minimum. So we silver soldered it together, and he took it home and put it together and then painted it matte black and mounted it outside. Now, in a circumstances like that, I mean, this is really bad situation. He still was able to, well, bad conditions may have been a little better a few years back, of course, but he was able to work 20 meters, Rich, and do quite well on 20 meters. Oh, he'd come in every day, tell me about the DX station. He worked on CW. He wouldn't dare try any phone operation because it's strictly a taboo situation, you know, where he lives. So he figured, well, on CW, you know, nobody mumps the word. And because of the way he painted it matte black after it was all put together and put it outside there, you actually, it was invisible, really, especially. I don't know how many people would be looking up, you know, 10 floors from the street to spot it, but he says, I won't take no chances. So, but it, under those circumstances, it worked quite well, Rich. But this is 20 meters. I assume you're looking to use this loop on receiving loop as I am on 80. Am I correct, over?
That's correct, Mel. I have a good vertical Kush Grandpa 8 on 10 to 40. I have a dipole on 80 meters, runs the length of the property. It's about 10 feet short of a half wave, and I match it with open wire line and a tuner.